ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Monday, the 2nd of March. I'm Melissa Clark in Canberra, coming to you from Ngunnawal country and acknowledging other custodians. Israel's strikes on Iran have fueled wave after wave of Iranian retaliatory strikes against Israel, with warning sirens ringing out across the country every couple of hours. Middle East correspondent Matthew Doran has been on the streets of Tel Aviv.
The crunch of glass underfoot is the only noise echoing through Shai Sagi's apartment in central Tel Aviv.
Like, we figure out that we'll see here a mess this morning, but I'm shocked, like, I didn't imagine even, like, how much damage.
One woman died and dozens more were injured when a missile hit a neighbouring building on Saturday night.
We were at our parents' house, and then, like, I got messages from friends. They recognised that it's near our apartment, and so we saw, like, videos online, and then we recognised it.
Out on the street, Avi is surveying the damage. His son lives a few doors down and is also having to leave.
And he was in the shelter, thank God, nothing happened. But we got very big damage.
Avi is reluctant to wade too far into the politics of the current time, but had a fairly straightforward assessment of what's going on.
Well, we're in a bad neighbourhood, you know. We got bad neighbours, that's all.
Soon after, the sound of another Iranian missile barrage, sending people scrambling to shelters, the screech of war jets and the rumble of interceptor missiles launching to pick the Iranian threat out of the sky, followed by explosions clearly heard from underground shelters. One of those seeking safety in the underground car park of an apartment building is Israeli opposition politician and former deputy chief of staff of the Israeli Defence Forces, Yair Golan.
You're no fan of Benjamin Netanyahu, I think that's safe to say, but do you think he made the right call in launching this attack against Iran now?
I think that Netanyahu made, you know, very pompous declarations after the last operation in June. I think it's hard to believe him. So I trust the IDF, I trust the Mossad, I trust our security establishment to finish the job.
With Iran promising to continue attacking Israel, particularly as Israel continues to attack it, there are fears there's no clear endpoint to this war, which will mean many more sleepless nights right across this region. This is Matthew Doran in Tel Aviv, reporting for AM.
US President Donald Trump has told American media outlets that Iran's new leadership wants to talk to him and that he's agreed. It comes as the Pentagon confirmed three US service members have been killed in action and five seriously injured after Iran launched retaliatory strikes. Our North America correspondent Cayman Gock joined us from Washington earlier. Cayman, the president's been speaking with the US press this morning. What's he said about these talks? Has he explained exactly who he'd have dialogue with?
No, he hasn't. And he said that the people that he will be speaking with are the remaining leadership of Iran. And that's because he told Fox News earlier today that the US strikes with Israel have killed 48 members of the country's leadership, including the Ayatollah. And so when he declared that Iran's leadership does want to talk to him, he said they should have done it sooner. They should have given what was very practical and easier to do sooner. They waited too long. This could be significant because previously the talks had been mediated by Oman and involved US delegations, including the president's son-in-law, Jared Kushner. But he wouldn't touch on when these discussions could take place. The reporter asked if this would be today or tomorrow, and he said, "I'm not going to tell you." In the meantime, he said that these strikes will continue throughout the week.
And we've seen the first deaths of US service members killed in this conflict. What's been the reaction to those deaths?
Well, this is the first time since President Trump returned to the Oval Office that US service members have been killed in a major military operation. We don't know many details apart from that three service members have died and another five have been seriously wounded. There are some initial unconfirmed reports that they were based in Kuwait. But this is something the president did signal could happen in his pre-recorded speech. But there is a sense of sorrow, but also outrage amongst Americans, because there is this feeling, particularly amongst Democrats, that these strikes were not out of necessity. There wasn't an immediate threat, but rather this was out of opportunity. And there was a recent Reuters Ipsos poll that found only one in four Americans Republicans approve of the US strikes on Iran, and about half believe that President Trump is too willing to use military force. Now American soldiers and service members are dead, but there are also many Republicans who support the president's decision, and there has also been large celebrations on the streets in America of Iranian diaspora celebrating the death of the Ayatollah.
So, Cayman, what's the White House's plan here? Is Donald Trump satisfied with the death of the Ayatollah and other senior figures in the administration, or does he have greater ambition than that when it comes to looking for regime change on the ground in Iran?
That's a great question, and it's on everyone's mind. It'd be a fool to predict what the president has planned. But if we go by what he's said publicly, that he won't be having boots on the ground, that it's only air and naval role of the US military, then it's an enormous task and rather potentially unlikely task of the Iranian people who are unarmed to rise up against an organized armed regime, even if it has been decapitated. There are many analysts and Democrats have pointed out that just because you kill the supreme leader doesn't necessarily mean whoever fills this vacuum will necessarily be better or hold less animosity to America. There have been increased law enforcement and authorities are on high alert for any retaliatory actions or terrorist attacks domestically. But there are also many Republicans who think that that's not necessarily the problem, and the US has successfully killed a man who for decades wanted to harm America and its interests. Here is Republican Senator Lindsey Graham on the NBC program Meet the Press.
Is there a plan? Does the president have a plan to guarantee that that happens?
No, it's not his job or my job to do this. How many times do I have to tell you? Our job is to make sure Iran is no longer the largest state sponsor of terrorism, to help the people reconstruct a new government, no boots on the ground. We don't own, you know, this idea you break it, you own it. I don't buy that one bit. It's in America's interest to make sure the Ayatollah is dead. He's dead.
That's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, and before him, our reporter Cayman Gock. The ABC's Global Affairs editor, Laura Tingle, joined me from Dubai a short time ago. I asked her what was behind Iran's decision to attack its neighbours like the United Arab Emirates, not just Israel, in its retaliation.
Well, it seems like a fairly excellent exercise in self-harm, doesn't it? Because as some of the leaders of these various Gulf countries have been saying, look, you know, basically you're isolating yourself even further. Of course, a lot of these countries had actually been lobbying very hard in Washington and to the Israelis to say, look, don't attack Iran. You know, we don't want the regional conflict. Just don't do it. It's not going to achieve what you think it might achieve. So it does seem like a really bad exercise in self-harm for the Iranians. I think if you look at the way the now ex and late supreme leader operated, he was always one for maximising the apparent impact and power and projecting the power of Iran through the region. And I suppose I would see what's happening now as an extension of that. They're basically hitting all of these neighbours around the region in a way that's trying to maximise the disruption and therefore maximise the apparent power of Iran, even when most of the assessments are that it's under a lot of pressure and it's going to have an effect.
What about the effect on the global economy? Because, of course, the Middle East location is one that means events that happen there end up having a rippling effects to the rest of the world.
That's right. Well, the most obvious implication is via oil, because essentially now Iran is also attacking Oman, which is absolutely neutral player in this and was actually brokering peace talks. And it's attacking shipping in the Straits of Hormuz, effectively closing them or shutting them down because shippers can't get insurance. So that will have an impact on world oil markets. OPEC Plus One producers over the weekend have said that they will offset some of those likely falls by increasing production. We just don't know exactly how much of an impact of a price impact that will have as a result, but it's created a lot of uncertainty at a time when the world doesn't need it. Plus, of course, you can't underestimate the economic effects of the sort of shutdown of air routes across the Middle East. Of course, that's something that Australians are feeling very keenly at the moment, but it's also affecting trade into Africa and Asia. So there are going to be lots of economic ramifications flowing from this in the short term and the longer term.
The ABC's global affairs editor, Laura Tingle there. And I also spoke earlier to Arash Bardalakhani, who is a research fellow at the Global Development Institute at the University of Manchester. Arash Bardalakhani, thank you for speaking to me on AM.
Thank you very much for having me.
In your view, can the regime survive given several senior figures have been killed, not just the Ayatollah?
I mean, the loss of Khamenei and top IRGC general like Pakpour is a massive shock for Iran, but the regime has a plan B or even plan C. Currently, a three-man council led by President Pezeshkian is managing the transition. However, there is a deep divide between the IRGC and the regular forces, such as army and also intelligence service. While figures like Zarif or Rouhani may try to promote a diplomatic managed transition, the real power remains with the security apparatus such as IRGC. Survival depends on whether they can keep the military united or if the system will fracture it from inside.
Iranians were already struggling with high inflation and patchy public services to this point. I know there are a lot of communication barriers at the moment, but do we have a sense of what the mood of Iranian citizens is as those authority figures are trying to reform?
I mean, the Iranian people were already facing hyperinflation and the falling economy. This conflict is the final blow, I guess. I mean, we are seeing like a 280 increasing in the cost of the living and the collapse of basic public service. For the average Iranian, this isn't just a political crisis. It is an humanitarian disaster. The regime is spending its remaining resources on missile while the people are struggling for bread. This economic is a pain, is the biggest internal threat to the regime's survival. And the people have to live with that and come to the end what happened in the next step, because we don't have any other option in Iran. And at the moment, the situation is very complex inside of the Iran.
Arash Bardalakhani, I appreciate your insights. Thanks for speaking to me this morning.
Thanks for having me.
And Arash Bardalakhani is a research fellow at the Global Development Institute at the University of Manchester. The Prime Minister has thrown Australia's support behind the US and Israeli strikes on Iran while sidestepping questions about whether they breach international law. Amid retaliatory attacks from Iran against several targets in the Middle East, the federal government has issued do not travel warnings for Iran, Qatar, Iraq, Yemen, Syria, the UAE, Bahrain, Kuwait, Israel and Lebanon, with registrations open for Australians seeking more information about evacuation flights once airspace reopens. Political reporter Sarah Tomevska has more.
He is responsible for orchestrating attacks on Australian soil. His passing will not be mourned.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese expressing no sympathy for Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, referring to two anti-Semitic attacks linked to the IRGC in 2024 as part of the government's justification in supporting the US and Israeli strikes.
We support the United States acting to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon and to prevent Iran from continuing to threaten international peace and security.
Shadow Foreign Minister Ted O'Brien has a similar position.
This is a murderous regime which has sought to penetrate Australia and see terror on our own shores.
Foreign Minister Penny Wong says Australia was given no prior warning and was not involved in the attack, but wouldn't be drawn on whether the joint US-Australian defence facility at Pine Gap was used or if the strikes breach international law.
I'll leave it for the United States and Israel to speak of the basis, the legal basis for the attacks. What I would say to Australians is that Iran has been a destabilising force in the region for decades.
Ben Saul is the United Nations Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Counter-Terrorism.
I think international lawyers are united in finding that this is clearly illegal. It's not self-defence. Iran hasn't attacked anybody. It hasn't been authorised by the UN Security Council, and you can't just use force to prevent some country at some point in the future obtaining a nuclear weapon.
For Rana Dadpour from Oz-Iran, whether international law was broken is secondary to Iranians' human rights.
Look, of course, laws matter. I think what matters more than law is human life.
She argues the Iranian public has been seeking regime change for decades.
And the fact that they were ready to give their lives in tens of thousands for this regime to go tells you, you know, the extent that they want this to happen.
In 1953, the CIA and MI6 overthrew Iran's democratically elected prime minister and instated Shah Mohammad Reza Pahlavi. Experts say this set off a chain of events that led to the Iranian Revolution in 1979 and the rise of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Ben Saul is wary of regime change by force.
The key lesson is that foreign interference doesn't work. It doesn't magically create democracies, and it's not the job of the United States to go around the world and decide for other peoples who their government should be.
That's UN Special Rapporteur Ben Saul ending Sarah Tomevska's report. As many people in Iran celebrate what they hope is the end of a brutal regime, Iranians in Australia are relieved and joyful. But there is some concern that the US-Israeli military operation could fail to eliminate what's left of the regime, and they're fearful of potential retaliation. Catherine Gregory reports.
Dancing with big smiles on their faces, Australian Iranians in Sydney's Hyde Park celebrate the death of Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. It's a sea of red, white and green, the colours of Iran's flag, and placards saying freedom for Iran and make Iran great again. While in Melbourne, an even bigger crowd of Australian Iranians brave the rain and descend on Federation Square and Parliament House.
The mood is absolutely nuts. They're dancing, they're cheering, they're peaceful. They've been peaceful for the last couple of months that I've been here.
Australian Iranian Amin Riazati says he's hopeful for regime change and a secular democracy in Iran.
I'm feeling absolutely elated. This is what we've been waiting for the last 47 years, not just the last couple of months.
He's encapsulating the mood of many Australian Iranians across the country.
People are very, very joyful. The right word to use is elated.
Sara Refi is a lawyer and human rights activist and is with the Australian Iranian Community Organisation. She says Iranians' biggest fear, though, is that there'll be unfinished business and the strikes will fail to completely dismantle the regime.
They fear a scenario in which pressure begins and then stops, allowing the same actors to rebrand, put on a suit and a tie, adopt the language of reform and quietly rebuild from within.
She believes most Iranians want the exiled Crown Prince Reza Pahlavi to be a transitional leader, since he is an advocate for a secular democracy. Sara Refi is clear. Iranians have experienced war and don't want another one, but the strikes are necessary in order to rid the country of the regime. But like many, Sara Refi fears retribution.
That the regime starts targeting hospitals, schools, in order to change the narrative and to present itself as the victim.
The regime has put severe restrictions on internet and phone connections. But Surin Edgar, the vice president of the Australian-Iranian Community Alliance, says he's had messages from loved ones at home and they're joyous. He also believes the regime is done.
That regime being controlled and led by Ali Khamenei. So it's not easy to replace him. They are trying to do that, but it's so difficult for them, and it's so difficult for that system.
He has faith the US government won't leave until it's completely destroyed. Sara Refi points out many Australian Iranians are thankful to the US and Israel for these strikes, and she credits the Australian government for also taking a stance against the regime, but says more could be done.
Catherine Gregory reporting. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Melissa Clark.